Chapter 5. It was in the latitude of 27 degrees 5 minutes and on the 19th day of March 1694-95, when we spied a sail, our course SE, and by S. We soon perceived it was a large vessel, and that she bore up to us, but could not at first know what to make of her, till, after coming a little nearer, we found she had lost her main topmast, foremast, and bowsprit, and presently she fired a gun as a signal of distress. The weather was pretty good, wind at NNW, a fresh gale, and we soon came to speak with her. We found her a ship of Bristol, bound home from Barbados, but had been blown out of the road at Barbados a few days before she was ready to sail, by a terrible hurricane, while the captain and chief mate were both gone on shore, so that, besides the terror of the storm, they were in an indifferent case for good mariners to bring the ship home. They had been already 9 weeks at sea, and had met with another terrible storm, after the hurricane was over, which had blown them quite out of their knowledge to the westward, and in which they lost their masts. They told us they expected to have seen the Bahama Islands, but were then driven away again to the southeast, by a strong gale of wind at NNW, the same that blew now, and having no sails to work the ship with, but a main course, and a kind of square sail upon a jury foremast, which they had set up, they could not lie near the wind, but were endeavoring to stand away for the Canaries. But that which was worst of all was, that they were almost starved for want of provisions, besides the fatigues they had undergone. Their bread and flesh were quite gone, they had not 1 ounce left in the ship, and had had none for 11 days. The only relief they had was, their water was not all spent, and they had about half a barrel of flour left. They had sugar enough, some succades, or sweetmeats, they had at first, but these were all devoured, and they had 7 casks of rum. There was a youth and his mother, and a maid servant on board, who were passengers, and thinking the ship was ready to sail, unhappily came on board the evening before the hurricane began. And having no provisions of their own left, they were in a more deplorable condition than the rest. For the seamen being reduced to such an extreme necessity themselves, had no compassion, we may be sure, for the poor passengers. And they were, indeed, in such a condition, that their misery is very hard to describe. I had perhaps not known this part, if my curiosity had not led me, the weather being fair, and the wind abated, to go on board the ship. The second mate, who upon this occasion commanded the ship, had been on board our ship, and he told me they had 3 passengers in the great cabin, that were in a deplorable condition. Nay, says he, I believe they are dead, for I have heard nothing of them for above 2 days. And I was afraid to inquire after them, said he, for I had nothing to relieve them with. We immediately applied ourselves to give them what relief we could spare, and indeed I had so far overruled things with my nephew, that I would have victualled them, though we had gone away to Virginia, or any other part of the coast of America, to have supplied ourselves. But there was no necessity for that. But now they were in a new danger. For they were afraid of eating too much, even of that little we gave them. The mate, or commander, brought 6 men with him in his boat, but these poor wretches looked like skeletons, and were so weak, that they could hardly sit to their oars. The mate himself was very ill, and half starved, for he declared he had reserved nothing from the men, and went share and share alike with them in every bit they ate. I cautioned him to eat sparingly, and set meat before him immediately, but he had not eaten 3 mouthfuls, before he began to be sick, and out of order, so he stopped a while, and our surgeon mixed him up something with some broth, which he said, would be to him both food and physic, and after he had taken it he grew better. In the meantime I forgot not the men. I ordered victuals to be given them, and the poor creatures rather devoured than ate it. They were so exceedingly hungry, that they were in a manner ravenous, and had no command of themselves, and 2 of them ate with so much greediness, that they were in danger of their lives the next morning. The sight of these people's distress was very moving to me, and brought to mind what I had a terrible prospect of at my first coming on shore in my island, where I had not the least mouthful of food, or any prospect of procuring any, besides the hourly apprehensions I had of being made the food of other creatures. But all the while the mate was thus relating to me the miserable condition of the ship's company, I could not put out of my thought the story he had told me of the three poor creatures in the great cabin, viz. The mother, her son, and the maid servant, whom he had heard nothing of for 2 or 3 days, and whom, he seemed to confess, they had wholly neglected, their own extremities being so great, by which I understood that they had really given them no food at all, and that therefore they must be perished, and be all lying dead, perhaps, on the floor deck of the cabin. As I therefore kept the mate, whom we then called captain, on board with his men, to refresh them, so I also forgot not the starving crew that were left on board, but ordered my own boat to go on board the ship, and, with my mate and 12 men, to carry them a sack of bread, and 4 or 5 pieces of beef to boil. Our surgeon charged the men to cause the meat to be boiled while they stayed, and to keep guard in the cook room, to prevent the men taking it to eat raw, or taking it out of the pot before it was well boiled, and then to give every man but a very little at a time. And by this caution he preserved the men, who would otherwise have killed themselves with that very food that was given them on purpose to save their lives. At the same time I ordered the mate to go into the great cabin and see what condition the poor passengers were in, and if they were alive, to comfort them and give them what refreshment was proper. And the surgeon gave him a large pitcher with some of the prepared broth which he had given the mate that was on board, and which he did not question would restore them gradually. I was not satisfied with this, but, as I said above, having a great mind to see the scene of misery which I knew the ship itself would present me with, in a more lively manner than I could have it by report, I took the captain of the ship, as we now called him, with me, and went myself, a little after, in their boat. I found the poor men on board almost in a tumult, to get the victuals out of the boiler before it was ready. But my mate observed his orders, and kept a good guard at the cook room door, and the man he placed there, after using all possible persuasion to have patience, kept them off by force. However, he caused some biscuit cakes to be dipped in the pot, and softened with the liquor of the meat, which they called brewis, and gave them every one some to stay their stomachs, and told them it was for their own safety that he was obliged to give them, but little at a time. But it was all in vain, and had I not come on board, and their own commander and officers with me, and with good words, and some threats also of giving them no more, I believe they would have broken into the cook room by force, and torn the meat out of the furnace, for words are indeed of very small force to a hungry belly. However, we pacified them, and fed them gradually and cautiously at first, and the next time gave them more, and at last filled their bellies, and the men did well enough. But the misery of the poor passengers in the cabin was of another nature, and far beyond the rest, for as, first, the ship's company had so little for themselves, it was but too true that they had at first kept them very low, and at last totally neglected them. So that for 6 or 7 days it might be said they had really no food at all, and for several days before very little. The poor mother, who, as the men reported, was a woman of sense and good breeding, had spared all she could so affectionately for her son, that at last she entirely sank under it. And when the mate of our ship went in, she sat upon the floor on deck, with her back up against the sides, between 2 chairs, which were lashed fast, and her head sunk between her shoulders like a corpse, though not quite dead. My mate said all he could to revive and encourage her, and with a spoon put some broth into her mouth. She opened her lips, and lifted up one hand, but could not speak. Yet she understood what he said, and made signs to him, intimating that it was too late for her, but pointed to her child, as if she would have said they should take care of him. However, the mate, who was exceedingly moved at the sight, endeavored to get some of the broth into her mouth, and, as he said, got two or three spoonfuls down, though I question whether he could be sure of it or not. But it was too late, and she died the same night. The youth, who was preserved at the price of his most affectionate mother's life, was not so far gone. Yet he lay in a cabin bed, as one stretched out, with hardly any life left in him. He had a piece of an old glove in his mouth, having eaten up the rest of it. However, being young, and having more strength than his mother, the mate got something down his throat, and he began sensibly to revive, though by giving him, some time after, but two or three spoonfuls extraordinary, he was very sick, and brought it up again. But the next care was the poor maid. She lay all along upon the deck, hard by her mistress, and just like one that had fallen down in a fit of apoplexy, and struggled for life. Her limbs were distorted. One of her hands was clasped round the frame of the chair, and she gripped it so hard that we could not easily make her let it go. Her other arm lay over her head, and her feet lay both together, set fast against the frame of the cabin table. In short, she lay just like one in the agonies of death, and yet she was alive too. The poor creature was not only starved with hunger, and terrified with the thoughts of death, but, as the men told us afterwards, was broken-hearted for her mistress, whom she saw dying for two or three days before, and whom she loved most tenderly. We knew not what to do with this poor girl, for when our surgeon, who was a man of very great knowledge and experience, had, with great application, recovered her as to life, he had her upon his hand still, for she was little less than distracted for a considerable time after. Whoever shall read these memorandums must be desired to consider that visits at sea are not like a journey into the country, where sometimes people stay a week or a fortnight at a place. Our business was to relieve this distressed ship's crew, but not lie by for them. And though they were willing to steer the same course with us for some days, yet we could carry no sail, to keep pace with a ship that had no masts. However, as their captain begged of us to help him to set up a main topmast, and a kind of a topmast to his jury foremast, we did, as it were, lie by him for 3 or 4 days, and then, having given him 5 barrels of beef, a barrel of pork, 2 hogsheads of biscuit, and a proportion of peas, flour, and what other things we could spare, and taking 3 casks of sugar, some rum, and some pieces of 8 from them for satisfaction, we left them, taking on board with us, at their own earnest request, the youth and the maid, and all their goods. The young lad was about 17 years of age, a pretty, well-bred, modest, and sensible youth, greatly dejected with the loss of his mother, and also at having lost his father, but a few months before, at Barbados. He begged of the surgeon to speak to me to take him out of the ship, for he said the cruel fellows had murdered his mother. And indeed so they had, that is to say, passively, for they might have spared a small sustenance to the poor helpless widow, though it had been but just enough to keep her alive. But hunger knows no friend, no relation, no justice, no right, and therefore is remorseless, and capable of no compassion. The surgeon told him how far we were going, and that it would carry him away from all his friends, and put him, perhaps, in as bad circumstances almost as those we found him in, that is to say, starving in the world. He said it mattered not whither he went, if he was but delivered from the terrible crew that he was among, that the captain, by which he meant me, for he could know nothing of my nephew, had saved his life, and he was sure would not hurt him. And as for the maid, he was sure, if she came to herself, she would be very thankful for it, let us carry them where we would. The surgeon represented the case so affectionately to me that I yielded, and we took them both on board, with all their goods, except 11 hogsheads of sugar, which could not be removed or come at, and as the youth had a bill of lading for them. I made his commander sign a writing, obliging himself to go, as soon as he came to Bristol, to one Mr. Rogers, a merchant there, to whom the youth said he was related, and to deliver a letter which I wrote to him, and all the goods he had belonging to the deceased widow, which, I suppose, was not done, for I could never learn that the ship came to Bristol, but was, as is most probable, lost at sea, being in so disabled a condition, and so far from any land, that I am of opinion the first storm she met with afterwards she might founder, for she was leaky, and had damage in her hold, when we met with her. I was now in the latitude of 19 degrees 32 minutes, and had hitherto a tolerable voyage as to weather, though at first the winds had been contrary. I shall trouble nobody with the little incidents of wind, weather, currents, and sea on the rest of our voyage. But to shorten my story, shall observe that I came to my old habitation, the island, on the 10th of April 1695. It was with no small difficulty that I found the place, for as I came to it, and went to it before on the south and east side of the island, coming from the Brazils, so now, coming in between the main and the island, and having no chart for the coast, nor any landmark, I did not know it when I saw it, or know whether I saw it or not. We beat about a great while, and went on shore on several islands, in the mouth of the great river Orinoco, but none for my purpose. Only this I learned by my coasting the shore, that I was under one great mistake before, viz. That the continent which I thought I saw from the island I lived in was really no continent, but a long island, or rather a ridge of islands, reaching from one to the other side of the extended mouth of that great river, and that the savages who came to my island were not properly those which we call Caribbees, but islanders, and other barbarians of the same kind, who inhabited nearer to our site than the rest. In short, I visited several of these islands to no purpose. Some I found were inhabited, and some were not. On one of them, I found some Spaniards, and thought they had lived there. But speaking with them, found they had a sloop lying in a small creek hard by, and came thither to make salt, and to catch some pearl mussels if they could, but that they belonged to the Isle de Trinidad, which lay farther north, in the latitude of 10 and 11 degrees. Thus coasting from one island to another, sometimes with the ship, sometimes with the Frenchman's shallop, which we had found a convenient boat, and therefore kept her with their very good will, at length I came fair on the south side of my island, and presently knew the very countenance of the place. So I brought the ship safe to an anchor, broadside with the little creek, where my old habitation was. As soon as I saw the place I called for Friday, and asked him if he knew where he was. He looked about a little, and presently clapping his hands, cried, "Oh yes, oh there, oh yes, oh there," pointing to our old habitation, and fell dancing and capering like a mad fellow, and I had much ado to keep him from jumping into the sea, to swim ashore to the place. "Well, Friday," says I, "do you think we shall find anybody here or no? And do you think we shall see your father?" The fellow stood mute as a stock a good while, but when I named his father, the poor affectionate creature looked dejected, and I could see the tears run down his face very plentifully. "What is the matter, Friday? Are you troubled, because you may see your father?" "No, no," says he, shaking his head, "no see him more. No, never more see him again." "Why so, Friday? How do you know that?" "Oh no, oh no," says Friday, "he long ago die, long ago, he much old man." "Well, well, Friday, you don't know, but shall we see anyone else, then?" The fellow, it seems, had better eyes than I, and he points to the hill just above my old house, and though we lay half a league off, he cries out, "We see, we see. Yes, we see much man there, and there, and there." I looked, but I saw nobody, no, not with a perspective glass, which was, I suppose, because I could not hit the place. For the fellow was right, as I found upon inquiry the next day, and there were five or six men altogether, who stood to look at the ship, not knowing what to think of us. As soon as Friday told me he saw people, I caused the English ancient to be spread, and fired three guns, to give them notice we were friends, and in about a quarter of an hour, after we perceived the smoke arise from the side of the creek, so I immediately ordered the boat out, taking Friday with me, and hanging out a white flag. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.